you haven't missed my luxurious voice. It's Sociable Socialism. I'm Joe Loudguy. Welcome back. And yeah, it's been a while since I've recorded. I was recording the day before Bernie Sanders dropped out, and I did a whole episode on an article that was written, in my opinion, prematurely. It was like a post-mortem on his campaign. And of course, the next morning he drops out, and it really kind of dampened the whole production because it was like immediately invalidated by like reality. So I didn't record for another 2 weeks after already being like 2 weeks late. And I really hope that this has been tantalizing for you to finally get a new episode of my podcast. Welcome back, and let's get started. Now, I'm not sure how long this episode's going to go, only because it's been so long that I'm not sure how I'm feeling and how much I personally want to dedicate to recording today. I'm doing this because, you know, you can only be down in the dumps for so long. And I've been, you know, I said in the last episode, I've been kind of depressed because obviously I highly anticipated Bernie Sanders' victory because from my point of view, the only way they could beat him, and I said this at the time, was if they killed him. I thought that, you know, the CIA or the FBI doing that was not outside the realm of possibility. You know, they're not exactly organizations that have a track record of trustworthiness, but I didn't think it was likely. And I thought that he could overcome any challenge that was thrown his way short of that pitfall. And obviously that was incorrect. It turns out the biggest challenge that he faced was an internal one of re-seizing the narrative after the mainstream media, which was always going to be against him. They were never going to cooperate. They're private corporations. CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, you know, they all have a vested interest in continuing a system that the American people do not benefit from. And the idea that they would ever go along with that or be won over was, from, you know, my point of view, never present in the campaign. That was never something that we expected. But I think that what was expected or not anticipated for was definitely the aging boomer vote. I thought, and up until, well, after Nevada, up until that point, it had proven correct. I thought that the millennial generation, all thrown in behind one candidate with all of the other candidates, you know, divided up, I thought that would be enough and that these guys were too narcissistic to cooperate. That turned out not to be accurate. They, in fact, did cooperate when the chips were down. Supposedly, Obama pulled the rug out from underneath the Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar. But whether there is truth to that or not is ultimately inconsequential. I did not think that the establishment would be able to coalesce like that because so much of their rig, scam, enterprise, whatever you want to call it, so much of their system is based around self-interest. So it was very, and maybe it shouldn't have been, but it was very surprising for me to see everybody coalesce around Joe Biden when Joe Biden was such a weak candidate that it made a point of telling people to vote for other people. I really thought that if that was going to happen, it would be with Pete Buttigieg. But clearly, when it came down to it, the demographic vote is what mattered. And older voters, older black voters, went for Biden. They did not go for Buttigieg. So that was what broke that debate. And they needed to coalesce, you know, white moderates behind Joe Biden because Joe Biden had black voters, older black voters. And what, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to break one way or the other? And they decided to break for Joe Biden because he was the safer pick. And that was probably true. And it's proven out to be true. I don't think Pete Buttigieg would have come this far. So Joe Biden looks to be the presumptive nominee. Bernie Sanders has endorsed him at this point. This is it's 12:08 a.m., April 15th, 2020. And I mean, it is not where I wanted to be. This is not the scenario I was envisioning. I thought that Bernie, because of his policy platform, would be ideally positioned to win out this time. And we already had a proven track record of someone upsetting the apple cart, so to speak, with Trump winning in the Republican primary, despite none of the established power wanting him to be there. And, you know, I guess I allowed myself to believe that we could do this through electoralism. And in fact, I said it multiple times. I thought electoralism was a more surefire path to impacting real change than a revolution. My faith in that conviction has been shaken simply because I've seen the limits of electoralism, and especially our electoralism, where the party, the Democratic Party, basically controls the entire process from who counts the votes to when we vote. You know, the process has been corrupt, but it was corrupt under Debbie Wasserman Schultz. So should I have been as surprised as I am of how corrupt it's been, this process? Probably not. You know, and a lot of people, you know, the Jimmy Dore show rails against this, and I've railed against their show because I don't think that his ideology is productive. I think it's ultimately a form of nihilism. But he's railed against the Democratic Party as a failed institution that cannot or will not support progressive values. And they made it very clear this election cycle that they are unwilling to compromise on their objection to progressives, whether it's Bernie Sanders or AOC. They are very much against Medicare for All. They are very much against the Green New Deal. The establishment Democrats made it clear that change is something they are not willing to accept or accept quietly. And I could go down countless episodes I've done where I've covered a bullshit smear that they did against Bernie Sanders. And I'm not in a good mood with Bernie. You know, I considered it to be a moral responsibility of his that he defeat Joe Biden. And he failed in that moral responsibility. So from my point of view, I'm already pretty pissed off at Bernie Sanders. And I'm still sitting here going like, but he is in fact a good human being. Like, I don't think that he's doing this because he's a bad person. I think he made tactical errors. And I think that the errors he made they're going to have ramifications for the next 10, 15 years. You know, I mean, a president is a big fucking deal. That's 8 years. And especially against someone like Trump, who I do think we can use the term fascist accurately. I do think that his relationship with foreign dictators is very much tied to a behavior of his, a leaning towards fascism, a distrust of democracy, of the people, of the news media. And I do think it's an entirely a self-serving enterprise on his part. And I do see the cruelty he treats not just immigrants, but anybody who is not white, frankly. I do see the cruelty with which he treats people of color, and this is distressing to me. So I viewed Bernie's victory as a moral necessity because, and I still believe this, I did not think anyone else was positioned to win. I did not think, and still don't think, that anyone is going to be able to unite enough of the electorate to defeat Trump if we put up another Hillary Clinton. We have a track record for that, and she lost. You know, I mean, that was a moderate's wet dream, and, you know, she was coherent. I can't even call Biden coherent. I mean, he's infinitely worse than Hillary Clinton. And the fact that he is now the nominee is, in my mind, a surrender to Republicans. And I've said as much on Twitter. It is basically the admission that we would rather lose to you than rally behind values that upset the billionaire apple cart. Because Bernie had the enthusiasm and the mechanism and was kind and polite to every person he ever met. You know, I mean, he never had a bad word to say about Chuck Schumer. He never had a bad word to say about Joe Biden. He never had a bad word to say about John McCain. He never had a bad word to say about George Bush or Barack Obama. It was only ever disagreements on policy, disagreements on things that he knew would impact the lives of working Americans. And I thought that was his strength. And in a lot of ways it is, because it proves how much he cares. And that is why I really do not agree with leftists who've called him a sellout. I've argued with them on Twitter. I don't agree with people that say that he is not left. I think he is very much a kind, generous human being who wants the best for others. I just also think he's too nice for the job. I think what I took away from this process and from the fact that I was literally defending him right up until the day that he called it quits. I'm still in the Bernie Victory Captain Slack. I took this very seriously. I volunteered quite a bit of my time, not as much as arguably I could have or, you know, should have, but more than anybody else I knew. And, you know, I don't consider it brag worthy. I just consider it a point to say that I was not like an average, you know, Twitter warrior that would post a comment, walk away and never think about it. Like, I invested time and energy into this process of helping getting him elected because I thought it was the most productive thing we could do to better our society, better our country, better the environment, and actually have a future to look forward to. And to see him call it quits was very much a not a betrayal, but a sort of a cherry on top, I suppose, is the best way I could describe it, to a process that, in my view, had very much been by his decree and not by what the movement was calling for. I feel like someone that says, not me, us, to imply that the movement is a group or a collective who unionizes his campaign. I feel like someone that does that, I guess I had the wrong impression that they would be more willing to hear outside opinions. And maybe the canary in the coal mine was when he fired Matt Orff. At the time, and I did an episode on this, I defended him. You know, I said that Matt Orfela, from the interviews he'd given, at least from what I was hearing, seemed too immature to be in a professional campaign. And I still feel that that's accurate. Because he, and you know, you got to take everything in the context of the moment. He was then railing against Bernie on the Jimmy Dore show and giving a platform to a lot of anti-left forces just because, in my view, he'd been denied a dream job of designing commercials for Bernie Sanders. And I said that, you know, that's small ball. That's very selfish to see it through that lens, because you got to look at it through the campaign's lens of wondering if this is worth fighting over or not worth fighting over. And I said at the time, you know, if I'm in the campaign and you ask me, is this small-time 25-year-old kid that has some troublesome videos that he won't apologize for, is this kid worth the campaign? I would have said no. And I said that on the cast. You know, you have to think about objectively what is being achieved here. So I say all of this acknowledging now that that may have been wrong. You know, I'm not sure. At the time, I felt very convinced that, you know, there was a larger picture to look at and that Bernie was seeing that larger picture and didn't want to gamble on that. But it turns out he never gambled in the first. He never, anytime it, like the Zephyr Teachout article with Biden, that article was perfectly fine. It was accurate. It went over Biden's corruption and Bernie apologized for it. And I mean, that's not some random 25-year-old on the internet, that's Zephyr Teachout. And it just sort of, that was a moment you could have fought over. That was a moment you could have said, look, is the point of the article accurate? Do you take this billionaire money? And he did not. Bernie, supposedly, according to the article I recorded half an episode on, and I guess that'll just be a lost episode going forward. Bernie did not enjoy attacks against Joe Biden, because Joe Biden had, in Bernie's view, and this is all according to the article, but in his view, Joe Biden had been kind to him when he was in Congress. And that was enough of a reason for Bernie to not want to pick a fight with him. And this brought up the point that my brother and I joked about privately, which is that Bernie is willing to take on the fossil fuel industry. He's willing to take on the healthcare industrial complex, the military industrial complex. He's just not willing to take on Joe Biden. And it was astonishing to me to have someone who had spent their whole life. I mean, this is an individual who drives sick people to Canada so they can get cheap insulin. You know, like, this is why I'm so defensive of people that want to say he's not left or not socialist, or want to blame him for the state of leftivism in America. I get very defensive about that, because nobody is making him drive these people to Canada. He's doing it out of a sense of duty and kindness, and because he wants to help, and he doesn't have very many other avenues other than to get them to a place where it's not even his country, a place where they can get cheap medicine. And I admire that behavior, and I promote that behavior. And I don't think that we should walk away from this election saying that we gain nothing, we learn nothing, and we never should have tried to change things from within the Democratic Party to begin with. It was all wasted effort. I guess I don't want us to take that as the lesson. Because if we take away that this was all a vain effort, then all of the high points that we were so excited for, all of the moments where we were like, this is the turning point, this is where we win the election, all of those moments, they cease to have value. And I think those moments really did inspire people. I think that it was among those moments that you had huge turnout, not just on Bernie Sanders' volunteer website, but in DSA volunteer. You know, I mean, I think that we inspired a lot of people, myself included, to become more active. You know, I never intended to be a victory captain. I did it because it was offered, and I felt sort of like, what are you going to do? Are you going to say no? Are you going to be an asshole and just not cooperate and not help him try to win something in Virginia? You know, I didn't think we were going to win Virginia, because obviously our senators are Mark Warner and Tim Kaine. But I thought that I could participate in mitigating the damage. And I had a role to play on that front and a responsibility. So I think that the campaign had a real purpose in invigorating a part of the electorate that needed a cause to fight for. At the very least, that was my experience. So I don't regret what I did. And I don't even regret the fact that we tried it from within the Democratic Party. And I don't regret the fact that it was Bernie that was the nominee. I don't see anyone else that could have been the nominee. And he could have won it, you know, if he had wanted to be more aggressive, or at least I think he could have won it. Now, obviously, maybe that's wrong. It's entirely possible that even had he gone as aggressive as possible against Joe Biden early on, maybe something else would have happened. Maybe it would have worked and Joe Biden would have had to give way to Pete Buttigieg. But if what's happening in, or what happened, I should say, in Iowa was any indication, they were never going to make this easy. They were never going to make it close. After it was clear Bernie was the front runner, every other nominee on the debate stage, or every other candidate for the nomination on the debate stage, said we should let the process work itself out. None of them thought at that time they would have enough electoral votes to be able to secure the nomination. And they were right to think that. And they were trying to play into the process as a advantage, as their only way forward. So the future is not written in stone. And we did not know at the time
that going at it from within the Democratic Party would fail. I honestly thought that we had enough support to make it impossible for them to get away with cheating. But because of how much rot there is in our system, I have now been disabused of that mentality. It's very clear to me that this system, and I think back to a game I played like 9 months ago, called, and many of you are probably familiar with this, it's the Outer Worlds. It was an RPG put out by Obsidian in the sort of the vein of the Fallout 4 Fallout series. And there was a line in it where they talk about how there was this complaint box on the side of a wall. And the complaint box just shredded every complaint that the citizenry put into it. So it was ultimately, you know, a meaningless device. But one day the complaint box broke and nobody showed up to fix it. Nobody bothered to get the gears in place. So they just sort of like put up a stall in front of it to hide it. And eventually that stall broke. And it just sort of became indicative of the rot that not only was it impossible to fix this horrendous, already unworkable system, this complaint box that didn't solve anyone's problems, not only was it impossible to fix it, but it was impossible to fix the thing that was hiding it. And I remember thinking at the time when I heard that how absurd that seemed, how ludicrous it was. And then a year later, it's proven with the Democratic Party, something that is so rotten due to corruption, trying to change its course, trying to steer it towards a better outcome, resulted in a Donald Trump reelection, I would say most likely. Now, I hope I'm wrong, and I'll get into that in a minute. But suffice it to say, I think at this point, it is very likely that Donald Trump will, in fact, defeat Joe Biden. Now, of course, I don't want that. I view Donald Trump to be a threat to democracy globally, not just here. But I think that even more explicitly, I view him as an incompetent administrator. I would be willing, I suppose, to hear an argument against democracy if there was any proof to suggest this person would be more effective than the current neoliberal electoralism system we have. But of course, all proof is to the contrary. And he has been unimaginably cruel to people of color, to poor people, and just generally speaking, as a part of his modus operandum, is to just sort of be an asshole to people. Women, it doesn't matter. And of course, he's also a rapist, a sexual assault perpetrator. He is a real estate mob-connected mogul who has Italian mafia connections and Russian mafia connections. And besides all that, he's just not a cool guy. He's kind of a dick. And I don't want him to be the president. Let me guarantee you and disabuse you of that belief that he and I have anything in common. He is the kind of person that I despise. Someone who's completely narcissistic and self-aggrandizing. He's someone that worships himself. His entire life has been built around the Trump brand. And that's all he is a brand. He's a sleazy car salesman. I said at the time in 2016, when I was a car salesman, that this is one of us, because I recognize that he's just a fucking liar. You know, I mean, I played that down a bit around my managers and around my coworkers, but that's what he was. He's trying to tell you this car is super, you know, run smooth. It's super cheap. I can get it for you less than the other guy. You know, it's ripping you off. I mean, that's him, you know. And I think that has played out in how he's run the country. So I do not want him to be in charge. I view him as a threat to any continued electoral process because he clearly has contempt for democracy and for the idea that the people don't like him and has, from the very beginning, like from his inauguration, having fewer people at it than Obama, he's made it very clear that he does not care for the parts of the, even just the play show government, you know, the acting, the ceremony. He doesn't care for the parts where the people get involved and where they make him look foolish. And it seems to me that he was very beatable, far more beatable than I would say even someone like George W. Bush was. And he was beatable. But this is a guy that was pretty much detested, and you could put anyone on the ticket and they would vote against him. And what we put up was someone even more conservative than Hillary Clinton, someone that lost to Donald Trump, one of the only human beings you can imagine on the planet Earth that was less popular than Donald Trump, a scumbag, unfunny, dumbass, rich, pseudo-mafia guy, you know? Like, that's all he was and is to this day. You know, a real estate game show host. Just a spray tan, nasty, trash human being. And we put up Hillary Clinton, who was viewed as universally just untrustworthy, corrupt, conniving, and I would say justifiably so. I think that she's done a lot in her career to make herself be a... she's her own worst enemy, you know? I mean, she makes herself out to be untrustworthy. You know, she always seems to be calculating an answer when she gives one in an interview. She's always thinking about how it sounds. You can see it in the way she pauses. She just does not come across as naturally affable. And they put that person up against a car salesman who basically just said, look, I'll sell this, you know, for cheaper than she will. And, it was one of the lowest turnout elections, you know, we'd had because nobody was inspired to vote for either of these candidates because they're both such scumbags. And that may be the one thing that gets Joe Biden elected because there's nothing else that's going to motivate him or motivate his voters, I should say. There's no activism amongst the people that supposedly, quote unquote, support him. But I mean, one of his most vocal supporters is Bill Kristol. And this is why it was so frustrating for me for Bernie Sanders to drop out in the face of this person that I consider to be a Republican, because he puts me in a moral conundrum. And I covered this on my last episode about a month ago, but it is even more difficult for me to square now because my leftivism, my socialism, my ideology is very much based around your pride, your personal self-respect really doesn't mean anything. What means something, what changes something is how much you have impacted society. You know, what gains you have had. You know, I consider self-sacrifice to be a very praiseworthy behavior. You know, something in service to others. I look favorably as a human being upon that kind of behavior. So for me, it is very difficult to look at Biden and see how someone who has been credibly, I would say, accused of sexual assault, who has no intention of doing anything about the environment, who has literally said we need to hold off on attacking Donald Trump. He doesn't think it's a productive thing to do. Who seems to have no plan for dealing with the coronavirus and whose loudest cheerleaders are all conservative neocon Republicans. It's very difficult for me to see that individual favorably and to be one to vote for them. And I have said on Twitter and I have said on this podcast that I have no desire to vote for Joe Biden. And I even said after hearing the Tara Reid interview and hearing her break down, I couldn't. It's not within me to do it. But the fact remains, and this is, you know, circling back to where we started, how much I blame Bernie. This is coming from someone who has deep respect for Bernie and doesn't want to tolerate anybody saying he's not a leftist. I'm also deeply upset with him because he has put me and anyone else who has any kind of like moral conviction on this in a very difficult spot. Because what is the greater sin at this point? Am I more of a hypocrite if I vote Green Party for someone that respects my vote, who wants to win it over and has policies that I agree with? Am I more of a hypocrite for siding with that person if Donald Trump gets reelected, because he will do more damage to those things I care about than Joe Biden would? Like, what I think about the environment, you know, Joe Biden is unwilling to take on climate change to the degree that it needs to be taken on, but Donald Trump actively seems to believe it doesn't exist and refuses to talk about it, has it stricken from public discourse. And am I more of a hypocrite for having these two choices and saying that I would rather take my ball and go home? Or am I a hypocrite for voting for Joe Biden, even though he has been credibly accused of sexual assault? And I think that that should be disqualifying. Among the many other things on the list is the fact that he's also has dementia or some form of deep neurological disorder. I mean, every interview he gives, he's losing track of what he's talking about. What is the greater sin? You know, I mean, because from my point of view, I just want to do the right thing. I'm not looking for anything deeper or more complex than that, because I believe that doing the right thing is the only way we're going to improve society. Because I actually want society to last past myself. I want, you know, I don't necessarily need to have kids, but I would like the option to be open. And I would like for those theoretical kids to have a future ahead of themselves that is not just sort of a bleak Mad Max desert where there's no habitable place on the planet Earth, where water is scarce and governments break down. I would rather have a more optimistic future for them. So for me, the environment has really been a non-negotiable issue, because it's not going to negotiate with us. When it breaks down, when things fall apart, it's not like Mother Nature is going to, you know, turn back the clock on the icebergs that have melted. They're melted. It's done. So it's very hard for me to square that, because you're killing potentially billions upon trillions of life forms, not just humans, but deer, bugs, you know, cats, dogs, anything that exists in our universe as we know it on this planet Earth is in danger if this planet is not here to support it. So for someone who has not shown the Sunrise Movement, has not shown any kind of Greenpeace, environmental activism, he hasn't shown any sympathies to those organizations, it's already upsetting that that person would win the nomination in a party that supposedly supports those organizations and has a constituency with those organizations. He would win the nomination against someone who was universally supported, but he would win it in such a skeevy way that the actual head of the DNC would encourage it. He would encourage states to vote and punish them if they did not hold their votes as they had planned during a literal plague. Like, that is unconscionable. And he decided, Bernie did, to support this party anyway. And I said, I think on the last episode, that I don't envy his position. And I still don't. Because what would happen if he didn't? What would happen if he supported the Green Party candidate? You know, I mean, he would be blamed. Anyway, he will be blamed no matter what he does. But he would be blamed entirely for Joe Biden's loss. They'll say he split the vote, that if he had only supported him, we wouldn't have Trump as the nominee or as the president. And they would refuse. The mainstream media would refuse to take any blame for their part to play and how little they gave Bernie Sanders his due, how many times they discredited him or lied about him or allowed known liars to come on TV and lie about his surrogates, whether it's David Sirota or Nina Turner or Breonna Joy Gray. They would bring on people that would basically claim that the three of them were deranged, they were angry, they were liars, they were discredited hacktivists. you know, whatever you want to say, they would allow these cap-backed cronies, and I say CAP as in the Center for American Progress, cap-backed cronies to just basically badmouth Bernie surrogates, and Bernie would just allow it. You know, I mean, he started at the end to push back a bit on the sexism that was thrown to Breonna Joy Gray and Nina Turner, but at the very beginning and through the entirety of it, whether we're talking about Matt Orfela or just the Bernie Bros saga as we saw it fold out, he did not defend his own supporters. In my view, there were never any Bernie Bros. There were never this collection of white people that got online together and just thought about dank memes they could share about Bernie Sanders as a way to own, you know, the libs, whatever we want to call it. That never existed. And I would say that as someone who shares a lot of memes and finds them hilarious. You know, anyone who follows me on Twitter knows that I really enjoy mocking people like this. And, you know, my mom asked me at one point, are you a Bernie bro? And I was like, no, it's not a thing. People just do that. Whether it's politics related or comedy or sports, people just share nonsense on the internet. It's not unique to politics. The only reason why it is considered objectionable is because Bernie's policies are objectionable, and his policies were objectionable because they involved wealth redistribution. And it was very clear to Noam Chomsky, and I'm going to play a clip from him. I have a podcast where, to my shame, I said that he was being pessimistic. I appreciated his viewpoint, but I said that his outlook here did not, like, because he basically says that the only way Bernie could win is if he had a movement that rivaled the size of, you know, the Roosevelt movement, the New Deal movement of labor organization on a scale that we've not seen. And I said at the time that this, to me, seemed to discount all the labor organization we've seen now. And, you know, Bernie had 27, 28 union endorsements before the end of his campaign. So I think that he won on the pro-labor debate, but that was not enough to translate to votes. Now, I have strong feelings about the way Massachusetts went. I personally think that was likely a stolen election, a stolen race. But even if it wasn't stolen, it doesn't make up for the simple fact that the media attacked Bernie constantly. Reporters hate him. Whether they're from MSNBC or CNN, they hate him. Bakari Sellers hates him. You know, every reporter that they ever put on him did not care for him personally. And I think that's going to bias your reporting, and it's going to bias the questions you ask him. And they would often say, you know, he's loud, he's angry, he's rude, just because he would push back on the very nature of the question. And I think Bernie did a poor job of taking that and smacking them upside the head with it. These reporters that would be like, oh, you're so rude. He's like, what is rude about trying to get people healthcare? Like, keep grilling them on their wealth, keep grilling them on their conflict of interest. You know, one thing Trump did very well was when he would get booed during the Republican debates, he would say, these are all my opponent's donors. These are their contributors. And that worked to great effect, because it basically says that your opinion on my speech does not matter because you are in the tank for the other guy. And that was a smart play. And Bernie never made a smart play like that, because he didn't want to play that kind of dirty politics. He wanted to win on the ideas alone, on his conviction, on inspiring the youth to come out and vote in a way that they had never before voted. And in a lot of ways, the youth did come out for him. He does have the youth vote on lockdown, but not to the degree that it needed to override the old vote. And that's why I said the real mistake he made was not trying to cater to the old vote. A lot of these neoliberal elements are acting like, you know, whether it's CNN or MSNBC, they're acting like Bernie's defeat is because he did not try to play Democratic Party politics as usual. They're claiming that, you know, because he didn't try to cooperate with the party. Or cooperate with individuals in the party, you know, Congress people, powerful, influential groups that, you know, superdelegates that held a lot of sway, you know, the Cuomo family, for example, you know, they're claiming that because he did not try to court these groups, that is why he lost, is because he wasn't friendly with them. My argument would be that they never mattered. You were right to discount their vote. nobody gives a fuck about rich people. You know, the Clintons, the Cuomos, the Gates's family. Nobody gives a shit about their opinion. What matters is the opinion of the, you know, the voters. And the fact that so many older voters trusted CNN and MSNBC meant you needed to find a way to shake their trust in MSNBC and CNN. And I think that Bernie was reluctant to do that. Now, I'm sure he was very conscious of the fact that if he came out against the media, they would compare him to Trump. But they did that anyway. They never gave him a fair shake, no matter how well he did. Even on his best day, when he won Nevada in a landslide, we just saw, and I celebrated that day, we just saw the media have a panic attack where they pulled their whole pants down and showed their asses to the whole world how much they hated Bernie Sanders. You know, I mean, they had anchors, you know, hosts on MSNBC coming out and saying that y'all need to fix this, basically talking to the party. Like, you cannot allow this guy to win. You know, Bill Kristol, who I despise as a neocon, you know, said, "Sometimes my fellow Americans disappoint me," in regards to them nominating Bernie Sanders in Nevada. And it very much looked like he had the nomination on lock at that point. And all of these elements that were friendly with the media, you know, Bill Kristol have a much easier time right now getting on TV, despite being one of the architects of the Iraq war and never having a war that he wasn't a fan of. Bill Kristol would have a much easier time getting an interview on TV than any of Bernie's surrogates. Namiki Cantz can't get on TV or CNN. You know, I mean, it's a near impossible. And she's not even like my favorite surrogate, because I think she has a hard time sticking with the narrative or sticking with like the story, whatever the story may be. But that may, again, come from the top down. I don't know how much give and take there is in the relationship between being a Bernie surrogate and just being yourself. I've never been on that side of it. I only know what I've seen. And Nomiki's jumped around from trying to run for politics to having her own show to being a surrogate to being a former surrogate. And I just get the feeling that she is kind of a wild card in that respect, because she jumps around so much. So in her case, I can understand. And I maybe these are excuses I made for myself during the process. You know, I was like, okay, I can see how that person's jumping around, how they're a little unpredictable. You might not want them as a surrogate. But then here we are. Bernie's endorsed Joe Biden. And we come back to the initial point that I made, which is that I feel kind of betrayed. Because the question is now put to me and anybody that has any kind of serious moral conviction: what's the right move here? What's the selfish move here? You know, like, is it selfish of me to basically say that this is so insulting the way this process was run and I need to vote Green Party as a way to make a point? Am I brave for doing this? Am I hurting people for doing this? Ultimately, what energy I expend going to the voting booth is not even a point on my day. It's not a blip on my radar. It's something you think about every 12 months. You go once in November, really. You know, if you're active and you volunteer to build up the candidate, that's one thing. But that's not the vote. You know, the actual act of showing up to vote is very brief. So I can sacrifice that part of my pride. I can sacrifice that part of my dignity for the greater good. And I've said in the past, I defend vote shaming, you know, because I thought that Chomsky had a really good point when he basically said that you're only voting for one of two options. And I've said often, politics is a prisoner dilemma in this country. And being incredulous at the fact that it's a prisoner's dilemma and pretending like it's not does not make it go away. You can't just basically say the game is rigged and therefore I won't play, because that's an option on the four squares of the prisoner's dilemma. And that option is less desirable than one of the other boxes you can pick. So no matter how you slice it, it's irrational for you to pick it. And in my view, it is irrational to argue that you should not have voted for Hillary Clinton if you lived in a swing state. If you didn't live in a swing state, you know, whatever. But if you did, in my view, it was irrational. Now, of course, it's on her, the candidate, to win your vote. And she bears the entirety of the blame for the fact that Donald Trump won. She was the candidate. just like how Joe Biden will bear the entirety of the blame if he doesn't win. But that is not the question that is posed to people like me and people like Sam Seder, where they ask us, how can you defend Joe Biden? What is your defense of Joe Biden? And what it comes down to me, at least, is I don't have a defense of Joe Biden. I believe he sexually assaulted Tara Reid. I believe her. You know, I have no reason to not believe her. I heard that story. I heard that interview, and you can listen to it on this podcast. I mean, but I recommend hearing the Katie Halper interview for it, its entirety on Rolling Stone. You know, I heard it, and this isn't something somebody would make up. It was like the Christy Blasey Ford interview. It was jarring. It was sickening. And I heard it for the first time on this podcast and sort of recorded my live reaction to it. It filled me with disgust. So I very much believe Joe Biden sexually assaulted this person. It seems to fit his modus operandi. You know, he is kind of a gropey guy. So what is the bigger picture, you know? Is nominating Joe Biden a good thing if it saves 1.5 million people, for instance? You know, like, I don't think that the Obama administration did what they should have done in regards to immigration. I think that they spearheaded a lot of the policies that have allowed the Trump administration to be as anti-immigrant and racist as they have been. I think they spearheaded those. But that does not change the reality that, again, like, are we going to put a number to it? And I also said this on the podcast where I said I wasn't going to vote for Biden. I've said this from the beginning. It's very simple. If you show me the face of the person that is going to die as a result of Donald Trump, if you show me them, show me their family, and ask me, the human being, the person, are you really going to vote to kill this person? I'm going to say no. You know, and my pride be damned. My personal feelings about Joe Biden be damned. I would give up my self-respect and vote against someone or vote for someone that, in my view, it contradicts every single aspect of who I am and what I try to bring into the world, what I advocate for. So it is challenging for me and frustrating for me to have this choice thrust upon me by, and again, my view, Bernie Sanders, because he chose not to fight as hard as he should have. Like, he had a responsibility to beat Joe Biden. It wasn't optional. You know, he had to be the nominee. And this is why I thought Chomsky was being naive, is that if we accept that Bernie loses, then we're basically accepting that the world is fucked, because I don't see who can beat Trump if Bernie loses. I mean, Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, they don't have black support. Joe Biden, he doesn't have left support. He doesn't have any support. His support is entirely like the geriatric voting crowd. And that'll get you to the nomination in the Democratic Party, but it won't get you the nomination for the president of the United States. It's not enough. So it was very frustrating for me, after putting in as much work as I did to Bernie Sanders' campaign, because I felt that I did it because it was the highest likelihood of success, was getting him nominated, of saving the environment, saving the planet, saving our government from a descent into fascism. I felt that his election was the most likely to achieve all this. And now it won't be. And now the more likely scenario, as far as I can see, is that Joe Biden loses to Donald Trump. But without beating around the bush anymore, here's that Chomsky clip that I've been building up so much. One that I played on this podcast before, where Chomsky goes into, in his view, the likelihood of Bernie Sanders getting elected. And you can tell me, well, you can't tell me, but you can hear for yourself what his diagnosis of the problems were going into this, and why it was unlikely, in his view, that Bernie would win. At the time, I said he was way too pessimistic and completely, you know, ignoring the reality of what was on the ground. I basically said it's because he's old. He's not involved in the activism going on right now. He can't, you know, he's not boots on the ground. He's not there, so he can't see it. And that was my thesis. So here is Noam Chomsky.
So now I want to turn to U.S. politics. You have expressed sentiments of support for Bernie Sanders. What are some ways that perhaps his outlook might fall short? I know you've described him as a New Deal Democrat. How are some way What are some ways that he can change to fit more, to express more the needs of the American people?
Well, I think it's first of all kind of academic. The chances that Sanders will win the nomination, I think, are not great. The main reason is this tremendous attack on him. Just take a look at how he's treated in the media. There's actually, it's pretty obvious just from reading, but there's a good study about it by In These Times. They published a detailed study, factual study of how the media have been handling Sanders. So I think all stops will be pulled to make sure that he doesn't get the nomination. If he gets the nomination, the attacks will be wild. We'll get the whole Republican propaganda machine going after this Jewish atheist, wants to kill all the whites and on, you know. Chances he could be elected are pretty small. But if he does get elected, miracle, he won't have Congress. How are you going to win Congress? The Congress is, the U.S. electoral system is structurally constructed so that the reactionary elements have an overwhelming advantage. Like in the last election, I think the Democrats won Congress, Senate by about 12 million votes, but they lost the Senate. That happens all the time. There's a structural effect of that maximizes the effect of the rural white conservative, where's our America and traditional vote. The Democratic votes tend to be concentrated in the cities, which most of them are lost, plus the gerrymandering and the voter suppression and everything else. So it has to be an enormous Democratic victory for them to win Congress, which is unlikely. Furthermore, even if you win Congress, most of the people elected from among the Democrats are basically what they call blue dog Democrats, moderate Republicans. They're not going to support Sanders' plans. On top of all of that, the fact is that U.S. politics are dominated by wealth. We see that all the time. The wealthy basically control legislation. So the barriers against carrying out progressive legislation are quite high. So could happen, but it would require an enormous popular mobilization, the kind that took place in the 1930s that enabled the New Deal measures to be carried.
Now, that sounded to me pretty accurate with what happened. It was always a long shot, and he called it a miracle if he actually got the Democratic nomination. Had he gotten it, the amount of smearing and anti-Semitism geared against him would have been astronomical. I thought it was already pretty astonishing considering, outlets like the Federalist, which are just a rag for far right, Foster Freeze, Sheldon Adelson types. I thought the fact that the Federalist was spearheading attacks against Bernie Sanders on his Jewishness was already pretty indicative that that was the route they would take. And it never got to that point because the mainstream media and the Democratic Party refused to allow Sanders to get the nomination. And why? Because of that point I made earlier, they are so rotten that allowing someone like Bernie, who is really just a reformist, he's not a revolutionary, he's just trying to fix the bits of the system that are untenable, someone like that is unacceptable to the system. Now, of course, Bernie would be the first person to say it needs a revolution. We need to have people, young and old, united across gender and racial lines and age lines to fight for each other. And he would say that's a revolution. But he's not advising that we discard the electoral process. He's not advising that we charge the CIA or the FBI or any other kind of institution of secret government that has influenced politics in America. He's not doing any of those things because that's not who he is. He is not trying to encourage the populace to grab arms and go out into the streets. I mean, Noam Chomsky himself is not a revolutionary. It's not who he is. He said it's a good way to die. If you want to grab a gun and go out in the streets and try to oppose the government, you know, be a sovereign citizen, it's a good way to die. It's not a good way to enact change, you know, and I think up till this point, Noam has been correct on that. And I also believed he was correct in his convictions that it would be very difficult for Bernie to win, but I thought he was blind to the fact that we had the coalition to do it. Now, I still don't know if that thesis was tested accurately, because in order to test whether or not we had the coalition to do it, you had to use the coalition. And I don't think that Bernie used it, frankly. I think that he was happy for us to show up to vote for him, but when we gave him advice on how he needed to be aggressive, how he needed to take on his opponents, he was unwilling to listen to us. So I think that the coalition is only as good as the person that wields it. And I don't think he was interested in wielding it because, as I've said from the beginning of this episode, I feel very strongly that he is just not that kind of guy. I think he's too nice, frankly, for this job, for this gig, to be the Machiavellian backstabbing person that we would need. You know, union bosses, union people have a reputation about them, even today, of not being nice people. They have a reputation of being skeezy, having mob ties, but ultimately just being sort of gritty, you know, rough, tough individuals. That's the impression most people would get if you said, yeah, I'm a union man. That's because you have to be tough to deal with the Pinkertons. That's because you have to be tough to deal with the police or the military showing up and putting a Gatling gun on a truck and driving through your neighborhood and basically sort of demanding you get back to work. You know, that's the kind of grit that you need to have to object to that sort of fascistic brutality that our police, our government has participated in and subsidized for centuries at this point. I mean, we are a slave economy. Whether it's wage slavery or literal slavery, we have been a slave economy since our inception. That is the kind of country we are. So to change that country from within, you need to be prepared for when that institution fights you to fight it tooth and nail and to challenge it to such an extent that you're threatening it whether or not it's even legitimate. Like, you need to threaten its legitimacy in order to get it to change. Trump would have threatened the legitimacy of the process and still does. You know, he talks about illegals voting for Hillary. It's not true, but he claims that the votes she got were illegitimate, that he won by a wider margin than anyone ever had. It doesn't have to have any truth to it for it to have its impact. He is questioning the legitimacy of the process, and it works on his base. And I think, broadly speaking, it probably works in the American electorate. I think if Bernie was questioning the validity of the news, it would probably have an impact. Now, I can't say for certain because Democratic voters and Republican voters, they're two different kinds of people. You know, they're going to be moved by different things. You know, what stirs their passions won't necessarily be the same. But from my point of view, a unspoken theme of our campaign, one of the memes that we had going online was fuck around and find out. You know, we had Bernie 2020, fuck around and find out, as like a inspirational banner. And that was something I share personally quite often. It's something a lot of us got a kick out of because that was supposed to be the mantra, is that we are the compromise. What we are doing right now is buying into your logic that electoralism is in fact a good thing. And we are going to throw all our weight and support behind a guy that actually has sane ideas. And even though we don't view electoralism as legitimate, because it deprives so many people of their vote, you know, and overrepresents people in very select communities, you know, reactionary elements, as Noam Chomsky points out, it overrepresents those reactionary elements. We're going to buy into your logic anyway and nominate a guy like Bernie Sanders to try to fix the system. And it failed because the system is too rotten to accept someone like that, who is going to change it from within, who's going to tax the people that fund the system. Oh, and wrest control away from the people that developed and perfected the system. So this leaves me and other lefties in a bind. Now that we're here and Bernie has dropped out, what do I do? And what do I tell others to do? I've defended vote shaming in the past because I viewed it to be correct. But Hillary Clinton was not a rapist, as far as I know. There was no claim to the Clinton wife being a rapist. You know, Bill Clinton, I think he's probably perpetrated sexual assault. He was a friend of Jeffrey Epstein. That's enough said. I already think it's damning enough that Bill Gates was affiliated with Jeffrey Epstein. And Bill Clinton has a far more developed history with Jeffrey Epstein. So I certainly believe the sexual assault allegations against Bill Clinton, but Bill Clinton was not running in 2016. Hillary was, and Hillary did not have sexual assault allegations against her. So I voted for her, you know, and I sleep easy to this day, even though she doesn't represent my point of view, because I believed she was better than Donald Trump. And I told people at the time, like, you fight the battles that you can fight. You fight on the grounds you can win. But someone like Joe Biden, who has committed sexual assault, as far as I can tell, who is clearly suffering from dementia, because that was the other thing, is Hillary was rumored to be a Parkinson's patient. That was something I believed at the time because I didn't trust the media. And it was only later that I found my through line between trustworthy sources and non-trustworthy sources. At the time, you know, I knew I didn't trust CNN and MSNBC, but I'd never heard of the Young Turks, for instance. So I didn't really have anything besides Reddit to get my news off of. And I found out after 2016 how much that had been wrong. But despite, you know, that inaccurate information, I still voted for Hillary because I could never get around the fact that it's going to be one of these two people and one of them is going to be better than the other. And I picked the person that, in my view, was slightly better and that would allow me, my ideology, at least, a platform where it could be discussed openly. And I didn't think Donald Trump would do that. And he hasn't. So that brings us to Joe Biden. And he's even worse than Hillary. You know, he's even more conservative. And he very clearly, unlike the fact that Hillary did not have Parkinson's, he very clearly does have dementia. I mean, he can't get through interviews, softball interviews, without completely forgetting what he's talking about, like where he is, who he's talking with. I mean, just little details he can't hold on to. This is a person who's very clearly suffering from some sort of advanced mental trauma. And apparently people in Washington joke about it. They all know it. They can all tell. And they don't care. So what do you do? What do you as the individual do? I mean, whether you vote for Joe Biden or the Green Party candidate, as I've said I will do, whether you vote for either or, your vote ultimately isn't that meaningful unless you live in like Wisconsin or Michigan. And if you do, what do I tell that person? I mean, I tell that person that I'm conflicted about it. But that doesn't mean that I'm right to not vote for him or that I would be right to vote for him. I truly don't know how to place a value on a life of someone trapped in an internment camp, as I feel Trump has instituted. You know, Stephen Miller is one of the longest lasting members of this administration, and I would very much consider him to be a Nazi. I cannot, and call myself a compassionate human being, turn my nose up at the suffering of so many people and look at someone like Joe Biden, who is a repugnant human being, and I cannot just say it would be wrong to vote for Joe Biden if it would save some of these people. Again, what number does it have to be at? 1.5 million? If I could show you 1.5 million people that Joe Biden would save over Donald Trump, would you vote for him? You know, show you their faces, show you their families. Would that do it? It would for me. It would get me to break. But does that make it the right choice just because it breaks you? Like, I truly don't know how to place a value judgment on somebody who is so against my core, who doesn't represent me, and who has made it clear he doesn't want my vote and has no empathy for me. So I'm frustrated. And, you know, I recorded a whole episode going into an article written by The Hill. And I, you know, it was, I would like to think it wasn't so bad as, of a piece. It frustrated me deeply to read it, but it wasn't the worst thing to come out of The Hill. It was by Daniel Marins, and it was called Bernie Sanders Soared Back to Life, But He Couldn't Close the Deal. And there were a lot of parts of it that I deeply disagreed with, especially in regards to Elizabeth Warren, but it wasn't the worst thing I'd ever read. And I completed it in the very next day, right as I'm going to post the episode, Bernie Sanders drops out. And after defending him from the bits about that were comparing to Elizabeth Warren, saying how he couldn't build the movement, how she could have, but obviously she failed to get more votes. After all that happened, I sort of lost my spark. I wasn't able to fight anymore. And here I am now recording this episode, and it's mostly amusing. And I don't leave you with any answers in this episode. I leave you with the conflict that I'm having. I don't know what is more or less evil, what is more hypocritical or less hypocritical. I only know that I want to do what is right. It's all I've ever wanted to do. It's a very simple thing to just try to help others. So I will have to stew on this more. And if I come up with an answer to this conundrum, I will share it with everybody. But we're in a pickle. And we're in this pickle because Bernie did not fight hard enough to defeat Joe Biden. It never should have been a compromise in the first place. But we're here now, and we just kind of got to live with it. And, you know, I can only say thank you for your patience with me and how long it's taken me to get this episode out. I appreciate anyone who's still listening. And I appreciate the fact that, you know, somebody considers my voice and what it adds to the discourse to be worth listening to. Have a good evening and good night.